Good morning. I have with me today on The Old Mole, Judith Arcana, who is a poet, writer, reproductive rights activist, and a Jane, a member of Chicago's pre-Roe underground abortion service. Judith is the author of many books, including Hello, This is Jane, a fiction collection that includes stories based on the Chicago underground. So Judith, welcome to The Old Mole Variety Hour.
Thanks. It's a treat, of course, always to be with the moles.
So I wanted to start our conversation this morning to talk a little bit about what we already know about abortion. And the first is that throughout history in all societies, among all classes, races, and religions, in sanctioned ways or in violation of prohibitions, women have always sought to control their own reproduction by terminating those unwanted pregnancies. We also know that abortion laws have much less effect on rates of abortion than you might think. Rates of abortion in the Global South, for example, where it is largely illegal, are comparable, in fact, even a little bit higher than as compared to rates of abortion in the Global North, where abortion is largely legal. The main effect of making abortion illegal is to make it unsafe. Another thing we know is that abortion is either prosecuted or tolerated, not because of what laws are on the books, but depends much more on the prevailing social and political context. And the most striking example, I know you're aware of, Judith, of this disconnect between the laws and abortion access is during World War II, when women were desperately needed as workers in the war economy. Abortion during that time was illegal across the United States, but in many, if not most, locales, authorities chose to look the other way. And in those places, abortion was not only easily accessed, it was safe. So the question that I want to ask you first is, under what kinds of social and political conditions do reproductive rights come under attack? Or in other words, what interests are served by repressing abortion rights?
Yeah, that's one of the crucial questions, all right. And I've been thinking a lot about those social and political conditions. I'm thinking particularly about in the moment in which we are talking, in this year, in this month, in the United States, the enormous, or I consider it enormous, upsurge of antisocial behavior, of rancor, both personally, privately, and literally in the streets, between and among groups of people. Lots and lots of people are very unhappy, very angry, very motivated to take out that anger in a variety of ways. Now, it has, of course, been building for quite some time, years, in fact. And I think that the buildup is congruent with the anti-abortion movement's actions and the fervor that they have sparked and fostered in their adherents, and also in people who aren't necessarily adherents, but who are easily struck by, oh yes. And of course, one of the central thoughts, one of the central concerns there is about the lives of women. I mean, this is, after all, a misogynist / sexist, et cetera, anti-woman society in many, many ways. That's not news. And the anti-abortion movement uses that fact. They're not stupid. They're clever and effective. And one of the things that they play on is the idea that women should be, it's so old-fashioned, it's almost hard to say these words, in the home, raising children, in the kitchen, not necessarily the old saw, barefoot and pregnant, but pretty close. And that is still part of the vision, which may seem bizarre, but I think that it's reality and that it's fostering this at the same time that it's a result of this movement.
Well, it's part of the cultural wars, for sure. Yes,
absolutely.
And can be thought of, I think, as a strategy by elites to pump up their base, get them riled up, and to support them, but as kind of a screen for what they are doing in terms of serving their own economic interests. So it's a way to, to rile up the base. But it's also, as you mentioned, very misogynist. And I think that's been true throughout history, that what we see is a pattern of repression of reproductive rights coming up as a kind of anti-feminist backlash.
Not just about feminists, it's about the fact of the existence of female humans. And I agree with you completely about this business of using it, you know, as a political tool, so that people, for instance, vote against, people of various genders vote against their own interests time after time, especially in the last 5 to 10 years, most notably, I should say, about salaries, about jobs, about all the health of the environment, whatever is good for people can take second place or last place compared to attacks on women that are sort of like, those are technicolor. And the other issues are in black and white. So yeah, definitely a very clever and apparently effective method.
The repression of abortion rights was really in the 20th century was most severe following World War II, which was a period during which women were in the workplace to a very large degree. But the other thing that was going on during World War II, and I think is part of the dynamic of the repression of reproductive rights, is the desire to control what is considered as the destabilizing effect of rampant female sexuality, if you want to put it that way.
Well, you could. Yeah. The idea of women and even adolescent girls, or maybe especially, but certainly adolescent girls as well, high school students, let's say, the idea of those people being not only overtly sexual, but not simply as targets of interest from male people, but of their own selves. And so the conversations that began in the 50s and moved very, very richly, may I say, into the 60s and 70s about how women could pleasure themselves and how even if they were having sex with male people, the pleasure had to take them into consideration. That was definitely not appreciated in many quarters and considered unnatural in many quarters.
Another issue that I think looms very large is eugenics / white supremacy. There's been a long historical trend of wanting to, among anti-abortionists or right-wing circles, of wanting to preserve the right kinds of births to make sure that the people who are being born are primarily white. You know, it's a kind of the nativist panic. Talk a little bit more about that, and particularly as it relates to what we see today going on.
Well, I think that, I mean, I agree with you. The eugenics movement, strikingly, in many, certainly here and in Britain, was, if not led by, sparked by, and worked by women. Women who were white and upper middle class or outright wealthy elites who wanted exactly what you just articulated, Patsy, only the right people to be born. And so the wrong people had to be, or the people who might make the wrong people had to be sterilized, if not outright murdered, both methods used. And that, again, I mean, so often when we look at kinds of questions you're asking, we think, well, what do they not see contradictions here? Do they not see that killing people, you know, they're so worried about killing fetuses, they're so worried about killing little, you know, in the very earliest day, little packs of cells, and yet they're perfectly willing to suit their own purposes, which is to create the white race and people who, in their opinions, not only had whiteness going for them, but were somehow believed to be intellectually and socially superior, et cetera, et cetera. And that in the interest of fostering more of those births, the very antithesis of their supposed arguments against abortion or even contraception was their method.
There is this contradiction that I thought about. Well, if they ban abortion, of course, that means more births of Black and brown babies. But it's conceived of, I think, within those circles as being primarily a problem that plays out in the white population. And actually, I even encountered folks writing from that nativist white supremacist position that they would happily support abortion for Black and brown people, just not for white people. One other argument that is made about abortion is that abortion or the repression of it can serve to control labor supply. I think that's slightly problematic. I think the argument is that if you permit abortion and you permit women to have their own work lives and limit their families and not just stay at home, then you may not have the big supply of cheap labor that you need. That it's, in other words, it's in the interests of the elites, the people who control the economy, who profit from a capitalist economy, want a big, cheap labor supply. The problem, of course, is that if you have very high unemployment, then you have lots and lots of impoverished people who then call on the assets of the states because, you know, the welfare state. And so it becomes a problem that way.
Right. Yeah. Also, another effect of having all those, quote, sort of extra people is that those people could get angry. Those people, dare I say it, rise up. And indeed, those people have on more than one or two or three or four occasions.
So what are the ways in which repression of abortion rights or more broadly reproductive rights gets visited more specifically on communities of color?
In an overtly racist society like this one, everything that is damaging to children or to women or to men who are unemployed, or, you know, pick a group that is a likely victim / target, is visited more hideously on people of color because the fundament is racist. And so when you're doing things that will attack people who have less opportunity, people who have less money, people who have less social position, naturally, people of color are going to take it in the neck. And we see this, of course, all the time. So.
Well, we're running out of time, but before we close, I would be interested in hearing how you see the current environment of repression of reproductive rights as compared to what you were living through during your time as a Jane, which would have been in the 60s, right?
Late 60s. Well, the Janes existed late 60s, early 70s. But of course, you're right. It was being the buildup to such action was through mid to late 60s.
And that was during the time of one of the most severe crackdowns on abortion. So how do you see today in comparison to what was going on back then?
Well, interestingly enough, I think things are worse now. I think that even though, as we like to say, or many people say, Roe is on the books, however tentatively or teeteringly in the moment, the situation, the feelings, the emotions, the political mechanisms that are affected by and are affecting abortion access are far uglier, far more difficult to deal with than they were in our time. For instance, the police as always, know what's going on in their precincts. They know what's going on in their neighborhoods. And they sure as hell knew about us. And they sent people to us because they knew that we were not, as the old saying went, butchers. They knew that we were well-trained and that we were doing good work. They brought their wives and mistresses and daughters to us. And these days, you're not going to find that so often when inevitably, as things close down in such ugly ways as they are in many Texas and et cetera, as the obvious examples, that's not going to happen. So it's going to be even worse than the worse I am beginning with this statement with.
No, that's interesting because there was a lot of that looking the other way during World War II. And you're saying that there was a fair amount, maybe more than we appreciate, of looking the other way at women like yourself who were providing abortions, underground abortions during the 60s, and that you don't see that that's necessarily going to happen right now.
Well, I think that people are going to take those actions. Yes, I think many good women and maybe some men are going to provide underground service. But right. What I'm saying is that it's far more dangerous now, and they're going to have a much uglier time of it. And the people who are screaming at them in the streets, or screaming at all of us in the streets, are going to be very, very dangerous, a la Kyle Rittenhouse.
Yeah. And like always through history, when abortion becomes illegal, it's usually women who end up providing those underground services.
Mostly so, although yeah. There have been, as the Marines like to say, a few good men.
Well, that's a great place to close our conversation then, I think. Lots more to talk about, but thank you very much, Judith, for coming on to the Old Mole and talking about some of these issues. And we'll have you on again, I'm sure, sometime.
It's a pleasure, as always. Thank you for inviting me.